Much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings drafting team meeting on Tuesday, the 24th of January, we have Matt Schneller, Michaela Nalon, Randy Ferguson, Konstantinos Komaitis, Laurie Anderson, Eliza Cooper, Lisa Garono, Jessica Hanyan. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Glenn de Saint-Géry, and myself, Gisela Gruber. Apologies noted this evening from Victoria McKevkey and Barbara Knight. If I could also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. I hope I haven't left anyone off the roll call. Over to you, Marika. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Gisela. Just to note that on Adobe Connect, we also have Wilson Abigaba and Jonathan Tannenbaum, so hopefully they'll be joining the call shortly. I see that Jonathan has joined in the meantime. So thank you very much for joining this drafting team, and I actually forgot to put on the agenda maybe one item that we need to look at is finding an appropriate acronym for this group, because if I have to say every time, the locking of a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings drafting team, that already takes up half of the call. But that's something maybe people can ponder about in the chat or on the email list. So first off, we just did the roll call, the first item on the agenda, and on the statement of interest, I just want to note that I'm very pleased to see that everyone actually has already completed their statement of interest and is available online. I think it's a first, at least as far as I remember, where at the first meeting we had all the statements of interest ready, so I want to thank everyone for making the effort and completing that form. So then the second item of the agenda is introductions. The idea is that just everyone maybe says a couple of words about themselves and then maybe why they are interested in working on this drafting team, so we have a chance to get to know each other before we actually dive into the substance of the work. So maybe I can just propose that I'm just going through the meeting view list. That's probably the easiest, so to make sure that we call on people that are actually on the call. So the first one I have on the list is Matt. Matt Schmeller.
Hey, so I am an attorney with Bristol and Giuliani, a law firm in Seattle, I'm in the Seattle office. Done trademark and domain name related work for about 8 years, and have ended up running into the domain name locking question a few times. I thought this was an interesting group to join up with. The situation that I've sort of run into is because the UDRP rules require simultaneous service, I've certainly had instances where the domain name owner and or registry, trying to take care of the baby at the same time, the registrar have been changed multiple times before the UDRP service provider has actually even gotten a chance to take a look at the complaint for verification and basic details. So it seems like an interesting task and some very concrete compared to some of the projects that I can take on. So looking forward to it.
Thank you very much, Matt. Michaela, you're next.
Yeah, great big bully, Marika, making me go next. What can I say? Oh, dear. Michaeli from Black Knight, we're the only ICANN accredited registrar in Ireland. We don't have a staff of millions, so any and all legal issues and policy issues tend to land on my desk. My interest in this is, as far as I'm concerned, there's far too much ambiguity surrounding the exact moment when certain things should happen. It's not at all clear. And I have no interest in opening myself or my company opening it to liability or anything else, simply because of a misunderstanding. Thanks.
Thanks, Michaela. I'll try to be less of a bully. Randy, you're next.
Hello. I'm a paralegal at Time Warner Inc. in New York, and I support our legal team in the domain name enforcement areas and trademark portfolios areas. And my interest in the group is to help support you guys in any background research you need. We file EDRPs on occasion, and there, like has been formally said, there's still some ambiguities and problems with the system, and I think the domain locking system is one area. but we're definitely involved in the UDRP, especially with the upcoming new release of the GTLDs. So any way I can help you guys out, and just let me know.
Thanks, Randy. Next, I have Konstantinos.
Thanks, Marika. Hello, all. I am Konstantinos Komaitis. I am currently the chair of the non-commercial users constituency, but my main job and my paying job is being an academic, a professor of law in Scotland. The interest in this group is because I think that everywhere I hear or see UDRP, automatically something inside me makes me want to join simply because my doctoral thesis and my research is focusing a lot on domain names, and my PhD thesis was based on the UDRP. And as the previous people said, I think that there is a lot of ambiguity concerning the locking of domain names, and we need to get this right. So I'm here to help in any way I can. Thanks.
Thank you, Konstantinos. Next, I have Laurie. I don't know if she's already on the call, or other Jessica.
Laurie's not on the call yet, so my name is Jessica, and I am working with the disputes department within GoDaddy.com. As such, we have daily interaction with arbitrations and UDRP proceedings, so we definitely have a lot of interest as far as the locking issue goes.
Thanks, Jessica. Elisa?
Hi, this is Alita.
Yes, this is Wilson.
Mark Monitor, and many of our clients file UDRPs, and as a result, we also want to help them get more clarity and get a better understanding of exactly, you know, when things are supposed to be happening. So we just want to kind of understand what or how things should work.
Thanks. If I can remind everyone, maybe when you're not speaking, if you can mute your lines because we have some background noises going on, that would be much appreciated. Lisa?
This is Lisa Garono. I'm of counsel at Haynes & Boone, and I've been practicing IP law since the Internet was just an idea in Al Gore's brain. And I think like everybody else, you know, I've had clients on both sides of the issue, and it is very frustrating when you sort of have to guess how things are going to work or how things are going to come out, you know, and if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
Thanks, Lisa. Next up, I have Jonathan.
Yeah, hi, this is Jonathan Tenenbaum. I'm a corporate counsel with Web.com, and we own Network Solutions and Register.com. So as a registrar, we're very, very much involved. We have a lot of IDRP action, and there are plenty of instances where there are questions and concerns, and we have issues with the current process or rules related to how and when domain names need to be locked. So having an interest in all this, I thought this would be a good group to jump on. Plus, once I heard Michele was on board, I was in. So it's an opportunity to dig into something that we definitely see on a pretty regular basis. So that was why I joined.
Thanks, Jonathan. Next up is Ken.
Hi, my name is Ken Stubbs. I'm one of the founders of Afilias and a director. I was also involved in the original committee that developed the UDRP. I'm still trying to remember whether Al Gore was at the table or not. I can't honestly remember. I'm basically a part of a group of the registry constituency that's taking a close look at this process to make sure that we can get things done more efficiently and effectively in the future. Thank you.
Thanks, Ken. And last but not least on this call, we have Wilson.
Yeah, this is Wilson. I'm the technical manager at Computer Frontiers, the registrars of the Betuji, or the Betuji CCTLD. I am been doing this work for about 7 years, and also do register what other domain names are not CCTLDs. And with this exercise, I'm joining this call. I'm also part of the WHOIS survey working group.
Thanks, Wilson. Thank you very much, Wilson. And as you can actually see on the Adobe Connect screen, there are a number of members that actually couldn't make this call, but I'll definitely send out an invite following this call on the mailing list that those that want to can also introduce themselves on the mailing list and share some information about themselves. And moving on then on the agenda, item three, principles of transparency and openness. This is basically just a reminder that as per the GNSO working group guidelines, all working groups, working group meetings are recorded and transcribed. The mailing lists are publicly archived. So it's just making sure that people are aware of that and also that you know, people are required to provide their statements of interest when they participate in working groups. So if there are no questions at this stage, I hope everyone's aware how Adobe Connect works. I think many of you have already worked with it in the past, but there's an option at the top to raise your hand. So if you want to speak up, feel free to use Adobe Connect or speak up if you want to intervene. And if I can remind people again to mute their lines, please, when not speaking, so we have some background noise going on. So next item on the agenda is the election of drafting team leaders. I've taken the opportunity at this moment to take the drafting team until here, but it's the normal practice that a volunteer from the drafting team or a working group steps up and chairs the meeting with the support of ICANN policy staff, of course, to help in organizing the meetings and providing support as needed. The drafting team can decide itself how it would like to organize itself, whether it would like to have one chair, co-chairs, vice chairs. In practice, we've seen that it's often quite helpful to have co-chairs or a chair and a vice chair in cases where one person is not available, the other one can step in, and it also helps in planning activities. So I don't know if people already had a chance to think about this and are willing to step forward and put themselves forward as a candidate for this role. So I'd like to invite anyone interested to speak up or to share their ideas or how they think we should could manage this this process. Konstantinos, go ahead.
Thanks, Marika. I was wondering, can we recommend people or do you want only self-nominations?
That's up to the drafting team. I think the GNSO working group guidelines don't prescribe how that process is done. It's basically up to the drafting team or the working group to decide how to elect or select their chair.
Well, if we accept nominations, I would like to put forward for chair Michele. So I don't know what the rest of the group thinks, but I would like to just put that forward. Thanks.
Thanks. Well, it's very convenient because Michele is next in line. So, Michele.
Thank you, Konstantinos. And, I mean, I was going to say if nobody's going to throw their hat into the ring, that I'd be happy to do so. But also, as well, as Marika said, having a co-chair or co-chairs is always a good idea because by its very nature, most of us tend to have other pressures on ourselves and can't always make meetings. So if somebody would care to volunteer to be a co-chair with me, that would be fantastic. Or, of course, if everybody thinks that having me as chair or co-chair or whatever is a terribly bad idea, please do say so.
Anyone else that would like to speak up or volunteer?
Wait a minute. I'll put my hand up.
Okay, so I have again Michele, Konstantinos, and then Ken. Michele.
I was going to suggest to reciprocate Konstantinos, I was going to suggest Konstantinos as co-chair.
So, Konstantinos, you're next in line, please.
Thanks, Marika. Thanks, Michele. I would be more than happy to help Michele if need be. Thanks.
Ken?
Well, is Konstantinos solved the dilemma? Because I was going to recommend that the co-chair be from a non-contracted party. So that works out just great. Thank you.
Okay, that sounds good. I mean, just to know that, of course, there's some members missing from the group, so I think the appropriate thing probably would be to share this conversation and the nominations that have been made with the mailing list and then hopefully confirm the appointment or see if there are other candidates that step forward at the next meeting. But in the meantime, I would like to ask us, Michael and Konstantinos have volunteered, whether at this stage you would like to take over chairing of the meeting or whether you prefer me to continue running through the agenda, and I'm happy either way. Michael?
Well, I was just going to say what you just said, Marika, which makes it sound like there's some terrible conspiracy going on between the two of us. I think in order to follow my understanding of the way these processes are meant to work, according to the new GNSO guidelines, in order for a chair or co-chairs to be formally elected or whatever the term is, appointed, I don't know, it should be go out to the rest of the members of the group so we could make a formal decision on that at the next meeting. So with that in mind, I think it might be best that you lead the discussion at this meeting until such time as other members of the group are able to have their input into the co-chair thing.
Okay, that is fine for me. And does anyone else have any comments or suggestions or objections to that?
No, just a matter of process. It might be a good idea, first of all, those who are on the meeting room up at the top bar there next to where you raise your hand, you can also vote using the agree or disagree. It might not be a bad idea to be in a position to say that we had nominated people at this meeting, and if we have a majority here, then we can put that out on that basis. And then I guess we could just indicate that I don't know whether we need a formal vote in this process or not, just food for thought.
Thanks, Ken. I think that's a very good suggestion. Per the rules, there's no formal vote required. Again, that's really up to the drafting team if they would like to take a formal vote, but I think a showing of hands indeed will give a good indication and something to share as well when we send out a note. So for those that are new to Adobe Connect, if you see at the top, you can basically set your status. You can raise your hand there. We can also agree. So if you agree with the nomination of Michaela and Konstantinos as co-chairs, you can just put the green tick box. If you disagree or would like to speak up, put either the disagree sign or raise your hand, and we'll come to you. And if you're not able to do so, feel free as well to speak up. I'm seeing largely green takes. I think we have a overwhelming majority here, so.
You have unanimous.
Unanimous.
Participants.
Yes. So I'll definitely report that in the email so people can comment on that. So thank you all very much. And you can clear status again by going to the same window and then just clicking that same box and clear status. Okay, so if we then move on to items for review. I hope people already had an opportunity to look at the different materials I circulated, but probably for good measure, probably good to go through the different items, starting off with the task of the drafting team. Because just to be clear, this is really the starting point of a policy development process. This is the first hurdle as such that needs to be conquered, which is the development of a charter. Basically, the charter lays out the work of a working group, which is the next phase in this process. Of course, I'm hoping that many of you being involved in this process will continue on and also be involved in the working group, but that's really a separate process that will start once the GNSO Council has adopted the charter. Michaela, raise the hand up. Go ahead.
Sorry, Marika, you know what I'm like. Just with respect to timelines and everything else, what kind of timelines are we looking at for this? I mean, are we looking at getting this done in time for Costa Rica, which I probably kind of doubt being realistic, or are we looking at having this done in time for Prague?
Well, to be honest, we're just talking about a charter. This is not the actual work. So what this task is really just defining or the scope of what the working group is going to look at. So hopefully that shouldn't take too much time, because a lot of pre-work is already being done in the form of a template which identifies some of the basic things of a working group, like, you know, what is the decision-making methodology, what are the different roles that need to be defined, you know, what kind of reporting needs to be taken care of. I think there's some charters we can look at of recent work, you know, we can maybe base some of those elements on. But probably what is the, you know, the major task for this drafting team is really to define what the scope of the issue is that the working group is going to look at. Because now it's very broadly framed as, you know, looking at the requirements to lock a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings. In a charter, you might want to define, you know, what that means or which elements need to be considered as part of looking at that issue. So as for a timeline, basically the GNSO Council can consider this at, you know, one of their upcoming meetings, but it means that a proposed charter will need to come in at the, you know, the deadline they have for a meeting or documents that need to be received, which is 1 week prior to a meeting. So for the next meeting, that's basically 8th of February, 6th of March, 4th of April. Those are for the next three meetings that are up and coming. I think probably now at this stage it might be difficult to assess indeed how much work, you know, will go into this, but hopefully by the next meeting when people had a chance to, you know, digest the items we've gone through now, have had a chance to look at the charter template, I've had a chance to look at the guidelines that are in the working group guidelines with regards to developing a charter. Hopefully, it will become clearer in people's minds what is required and you know, where bulk of the work may lie. But with that in mind, I'm hoping that the drafting team will be able to put something in front of the council by Costa Rica, as there's still some time till we get there. But again, it depends on how often the group can meet and how much time people can spend on putting the charter together. So basically as well, the language that is on here comes from the call for volunteers, because what we basically did is lift the language of the resolution that the council adopted forming or initiating a policy development process on this topic, with the required next step being the formation of this drafting team. And we're highlighted there already that in the development of a charter, there are a number of elements that are required, which are at a minimum the working group identification, so the name, what is its mission, the purpose, and what are the deliverables expected, information relating to the formation, the staffing, and organization of the working group, and its rules of engagement. And I'll show you in a minute with the template, you know, how that all fits together. And as I said, for some of these fields, there's already information available, and it's not something that, you know, the drafting team has to come up with by itself. So if we then move on to the next item, which is basically the charter guidelines. If you give me 1 second. So basically some time ago, as part of the GNSO improvements, it was decided that there should be some kind of process under which GNSO working groups work. So some guidelines which basically define how a working group should be run, define the different roles that you can find in the working group, also define how they should make decisions, identify the different levels of consensus. So, and as part of those GNSO working group guidelines, there's also a section that specifically deals with the development of working group charters. And that's actually in section 6 of this document, which starts on page 14. So the first part, the 6.1, actually talks more about once a working group is formed, how that should be implemented, which doesn't really fit into the charter, but it might be something where, you know, the drafting team wants to give specific guidance to the council once they adopt the charter and move forward with the creation of a working group. There might be specific groups that you think should be approached when the call for volunteers goes out, or certain fora where this might be communicated. So guidance in that respect could be given in relation to this specific item. But the real bulk of this, what relates to what the drafting team is tasked to do, is basically in 6.2. That means it basically outlines gives the different templates for a charter. I think it's important to know that not all of these sections are required. It's up to the drafting team to decide which they think need to be included as part of this working group, apart from those that I mentioned before that are required elements. And for each of these sections, it basically describes what is expected or what kind of information should be included in those relevant sections. If you look at the first one, for example, 6.2.1, the working group identification, so that should basically you should give the name there, link to the motion that actually created that working group, also, you know, making sure to reference that, you know, is there already an appointed liaison? Are there any advisors to the working group that should be included? Certain information might only be available later, for example, the name of the working group chair, because often that's at a later date, and you know, provide relevant things. So then there are all the additional sections. I think it's important that everyone reviews this document, but I think for our discussion it's probably more helpful to go straight into the template, which has been specifically developed to, you know, model what is in here to help drafting teams developing charters. So I'll pull that up now. So here we go. So I'm just going to take you through that. So as I said before, this standard is really to assist working group, the development of working group charters. Of course, you know, drafting teams might decide to ignore this and start from scratch, but I think some previous efforts have shown that this is a very helpful tool and makes it a lot easier to get the relevant information into one document and provide some guidance and linking back and forth to the genus or working group guidelines. It says here as well, like the sections 1, 2, and 3, those are minimally required. Other sections are optional, so it's important for the drafting team to review which of those other sections should be included and whether there are any other elements that you feel are important to have included here. So again, and then the first few pages, it just goes into more detail of what each of those sections entails. And then the actual template starts on page 4. So in principle, the task of this drafting team is really to complete this document, which is then submitted to the GNSO Council for its consideration and hopefully adoption. So from my personal perspective, probably the key elements there is really Section 2, where it's the mission, the purpose, and the deliverables that need to be completed. As this is a kind of a unique PDP that has come out of, you know, two different processes as such and hasn't really been preceded by an issue report that has really already scoped the issue in great detail, which in most cases forms the basis for the development of a charter. And it's more of a challenge probably for this drafting team to really make sure that, you know, everyone agrees on what the mission and scope is of the working group that will follow. With regard to deliverables and timeframes, I will provide you with some information there because the GNSO Council recently developed adopted a new policy development process, which sets certain timelines and already indicates certain deliverables that need to be accomplished by a working group. So, of course, the draft team is free to add on to those, but those are set currently in the policy development process. So then Section 3, that talks more about formation, staffing, and organizations. So there, the draft team can decide what kind of roles you think are appropriate, making sure as well that people are aware that statements of interest are required. Section 4 talks about the rules of engagement. Basically, this is also listed from the working group guidelines, and this is the way in which decisions are being made. And again, this is something that is in principle the standard unless the working group or the drafting team has any strong reasons why they think that there should be a deviation from this process, and it will be something that would need to be considered then by the GNSO Council. Michaela?
Sorry, Marika. just to kind of break this down into something really simple for my poor little brain, in essence, what we need to do is to be able to complete this template and then fill out the details in this template.
Correct. And okay, you would need to identify whether there are any elements missing from the template, if there's anything that you think that isn't provided for.
Okay. So what I would suggest possibly as an action item for the next meeting would be that we actually have one that we can, you know, as in a blank one that we can actually start filling out the bits that we don't have any disagreement on. And then it's just a matter of, in simple terms, because obviously this is ICANN, so nothing's ever simple, thrashing out the details for the more contentious parts. Or am I missing something?
No, this is Marika. That's right. This template is already available blank. What is filled in is basically pre-filled in from what is in the working group guidelines, which is in principle what is required under the genus of working group guidelines. As said, I think the council can deviate from those, but it would be probably had to be very unique circumstances why they wouldn't follow the genus of working group guidelines. So what has been pre-filled in here is basically standard language that comes from the genus of working group guidelines. So all the rest is blank and indeed for the drafting team to complete.
So basically set out the form.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And as I said, just see if there are any elements that you think should be added, based on discussions. But as I said, I think it probably is helpful if I share as well with you some of the charters that have been recently developed using this template. I think one of the recent ones is the consumer metrics group. I think they've used this as well, so that might serve as a model of how to fill in some of those other fields. Okay, I'll add those links. So basically, the decision-making methodology is already standard and enshrined in the working group guidelines. There's a section as well on status reporting that's more talking about when is the working group expected to report on a regular basis? Is there special mechanisms that needs to be used? Michaela?
Sorry, Marika.
No?
Just looking at the list of people who are participating, I know some people have been involved. Konstantinos and Ken are old hands. No offense, Ken. And a couple of others I recognize. I mean, for just as a matter of curiosity, and I'm going to lower my hand now, for how many of you is this your first ICANN working group? Don't be scared. There's one. Anybody else?
This is Matt. This is my first as well.
Okay. I mean, I think just one thing. Sorry, Marika, kind of stealing this away from you, but you know what I'm like.
Go ahead.
Now, okay, basically, there is all this kind of terribly tedious and boring stuff that has to be followed in terms of these guidelines and for how these things are done and everything else. But, okay, I'm not a lawyer, so I tend to look at things in much simpler kind of, okay, this is a document with a number of boxes and titles. We need to be able to fill it out. Now, unfortunately as well, for those of you who haven't been involved in a lot of the working groups, you might find at times that those of us who have are making certain assumptions. You'll find at times as well that it's, acronym soup. There's lots of acronyms being thrown around. There's references to GNSO, to ALAC, to NCUC, to contracted parties, non-contracted parties, and a whole range of other terms that you might not be familiar with. Now, what I would suggest maybe is that for those people who, if there is something that you don't understand that isn't clear to you, please, raise your hand on the chat room, interrupt Marika or whoever is speaking and ask them to clarify it in simpler terms. A lot of the time, it's a bit of jargon. There's quite a few lawyers on this call. You all deal with the terminology that I can't understand. In the ICANN speak, it's a lot of the time we're talking about very simple things. We just have a different way of talking about it. But just please, if there's something that isn't clear, please, ask, or if you don't want to ask there, just ping one of the others who you're not afraid to ask off list or whatever. Ken, go ahead.
Yeah, Yeah, the easiest way of putting it is I've been doing this for 14 years, and the acronyms drive me absolutely insane. So I would hope that we just try to keep it to a minimum so that people aren't intimidated. And, you know, it just makes it a lot easier to stay away from acronyms unless you absolutely feel like you have to use them. I'm sorry. I'm not the only one who feels that way.
Thanks, Ken and Michaela. And I would just extend as well the offer of anyone wants to talk after the call or wants to have some information as well where, for example, this specific effort fits into the overall policy development process. I'm happy to explain or answer any questions. And I think just to emphasize as well that, indeed, this is about, filling out this template. This is not really yet the bulk of the work which, falls in the next step. So I want to make sure as well that, there's no need to overthink certain issues. I mean, the mission might be as simple as saying, the working group is tasked to explore the issue of locking up a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings and make any recommendations it deems appropriate on, addressing any issues that it has encountered. It might be something as straightforward as that. If you look at some of the other charters, for example, for some of the inter-registrar transfer policy working groups that are currently ongoing, they just ask very basic questions. It's not, 5 pages of explanation. So, I don't think there's a need to overthink and be too worried about, the complexities of what is needs to go in here. And as Michaela says, it's a template that we need to fill in. And hopefully, many of the fields, it will be very straightforward and an easy task to do. And Michaela?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to add as well is, Gisela and Marika work full-time for ICANN. They eat, sleep, and drink all these wonderful things like PDP and GNSO and CCNSO and all these things, and it all comes as second nature to them. But, those of us who've been doing this for a little while, we started out not having a clue. And, Marika and Gisela and the other people like that, they're fantastic resources as well. You can, if you want to ask, if there's something that isn't clear and you don't, might not want to ask somebody else on the group or whatever, they're always incredibly helpful. They make the rest of us look good. Thanks.
Thanks, Michaela. And as I said before, I'm sure for many news calls, it's very difficult, it's not easy to digest indeed how the whole process works, but I'm happy as well to have a side conversation or with those that are interested to know how the whole PDP process works and where this specifically fits in, because this is just one step of that whole policy development process at which at the end of the road, hopefully there are policy recommendations that then become or are adopted by the board and then hopefully address the issue that was initially set out to be addressed. So maybe we just leave the template there for now. I think, for the next call, it's probably important that everyone just has a look through the template and looks at the working group guidelines, that section 6, to, further understand what is required for each of those different elements of a charter. And I said at the same time, I'll share some examples from recent working groups that have also used this template that will give you hopefully a better idea of how to approach completing this charter for this specific issue. So then the other thing I've done, and let me just pull this down now. Or Michaela, go ahead. In the meantime, I'll pull up my other document.
Yeah. Sorry, Marika. The other thing as well is I think things like the GNSO liaisons and all that doesn't get decided until it's actually moving forward to beyond this. It's at the next stage when it goes to council for a PDP motion. Is that right, Marika?
Yeah, that's correct. Normally, so, as I said, some of the elements also like the chair, those things are filled in at a later date once that is known. So it's usually when indeed the council approves a charter, or will ask at the same time the council members, who is willing to serve as a liaison to that group. For example, if there are already council members that will be participating here, they, could volunteer. I mean, Joy, for example, she's a member of the GNSO Council. She might already be, willing to put herself forward, and in that case, it could already be part of the charter. But, that's not a required field at this stage. Does that answer your question? Okay. Great. So what I've done, because as I said, this, you know, where we are at this stage now has followed a little bit of a different process compared to the usual PDP, because normally a policy development process kicks off with an issue report, which is a paper that is prepared by staff that basically outlines the issue and defines, you know, what are different concerns and what elements need to be considered as part of a policy development process. However, in this case, this specific issue was actually raised as part of the Inter-Registrar Transfer Policy Part B working group. They received comments from WIPO related to this issue as they were looking at locking up domain names as well, but not specifically in relation to UDRP proceedings. So one of their recommendations at that stage was, well, we don't think we should be looking at that issue from an inter-registrar transfer policy. We think this is a better suited topic at the point the UDRP gets reviewed. And I think, as many as you know, at some point there was also a request, there was an issue report on a possible review of the UDRP, in which, again, this issue was also touched upon, but not the main focus of that paper. And as a result of those two parallel tracks or subsequent tracks as such, the council in the end decided that they didn't want to go ahead with a full-blown UDRP review, or at least they set a timeline for when that should happen. But they did agree that this specific issue, as it was highlighted as part of the IRTP discussions and also flagged again as part of the issue report on the UDRP, that specific element should be taken forward and addressed at this stage. So as such, there is not a specific issue report available that just talks about this issue, but what I've tried to do in the document that's up on the screen and I also circulated is I've tried to draw from the different documents that have discussed this issue and the different relevant policies that currently exist, which hopefully will serve as a basis to, you know, help inform our discussions. Michaela?
Just as you mentioned, IRTP, which is basically the policy governing transfers of domains between registrars, which I think a couple of other people mentioned in their introductions, this is where they were having problems and seen issues. A couple of the people who are down as for this working group have a lot of experience in IRTP. I think, Jonathan, are you an IRTPC, Jonathan?
Yep, I am.
Yeah, so Jonathan's an IRTP, so am I. I think Paul Diaz is. He was an IRTPB and IRTPA.
Paul's on he should be part of the C as well.
Yeah, so like there's several of us who've lived through that entire transfer thing, so if anybody has any wants to know anything about what the hell went on there or didn't go on there, you can always ask us. And I know Konstantinos has a lot to say about UDRP reform, and I'm sure there are other people who have completely opposite things to say about it. But let's, you know, use people's experiences and knowledge rather than trying to be too polemic, I suppose. Konstantinos.
Thank you, Michele. Yes. Basically, what I suggest, because I think that, things are getting a little bit complicated and complex, is that we need to stick. I mean, the problem that we're facing is that there is not really a document that provides background information on the locking of a domain name subject to the UDRP proceedings. So, you know, we need to... And I would like to ask whether the staff has the time to extract that information and create a separate document on why this group was formed and proceed onwards. I don't think that there is any value in us having discussion about the UDRP review or reform. That is a decision that the GNSO has already decided on, and it's not the mandate of this group. I think that we need to start. Kickstart the process, and I would ideally, and I know that, you know, this might sound a little bit unfeasible or rushed, but I would ideally, it would be very good if we could have the charter by Costa Rica.
Thanks, Konstantinos. And actually, you know, part of that information is hopefully in the document that you see on the screen, which I'll go through if Michaela lets me at some point. But again, I think on you know, gathering further information, that is, for example, some specific guidance that could be included in the charter that you know, the first task of a working group is to, you know, for example, open a public comment forum to invite people to share their experiences with, you know, this specific process and the challenges they have encountered. So as an exercise of maybe, you know, the information that is lacking to try to get that at the start of the working group process, because I think it's obvious that there are issues, but, you know, further information or data might be helpful on, you know, what the specific issues are, as that will help, hopefully, the working group define what potential solutions could be. Michaela?
Yeah, I mean, just backing up what Constantino said, I mean, you know, just let's try and keep this as simple as possible. Ideally, if we could sum up what is the problem without getting into lengthy commentary on life, the universe, and everything, what is the problem? I mean, there's people on this call who've all said that they have issues, that they've experienced issues. So maybe if we can just work on identifying in, you know, simple terms what the hell those are, you know, what is the issue? Like somebody mentioned, and I'm sorry, I don't remember who it was, something about how, you know, domains being transferred from one registrar to another when even after a UDRP process has begun. So, I mean, that's an obvious issue. So people are, you know, registrars aren't locking domains quickly enough. That's how I would simply view that. Maybe there's other things like that.
Yeah, and this is Rick. I think if you look at page 2 and 3 of the document, I think you there will already find some specific comments that have been made on what the problems are. If you look, for example, at there's this little table there that, you know, no requirement to log names in the period between filing complaint and commencement of proceedings, need for clarification of domain locking, a comment that unclear what is meant by status quo, no explanation of legal lock mechanisms and when they go into effect or when they should be removed. And I think it comes partly back then as well. I mean, I think the comment from WIPO is what, you know, started the whole discussion. They provide as well some further information on that. But if you actually look at the UDRP itself, and I'm definitely no expert, so I'll defer there to the expert there, but the only thing I could find that actually related to this issue is this number 7, which talks about maintaining the status quo. But it doesn't really define, you know, what is status quo or when is status quo come into effect. And there doesn't seem to be any further guidance on, you know, indeed the locking and when that should happen. So I think there's already some information in here that should hopefully help in the definition of the actual problem. I saw that Matt had his hand up, but he dropped it again. So I don't know if your point was already made or you changed your mind or still want to speak up.
I was just going to note that some of those problems are already noted in the document, but you did too.
Okay, thanks. So, but again, I think if you know, people have other sources of information, and that's hopefully, you know, as well as one of the action items we can record from this session, is that if there are any other ICANN-related documents or information that is relevant for, you know, defining the problem, you know, please feel free to suggest, and you know, we can build and add that information maybe to this document or a separate document. So just very briefly on this document, that we have, you know, 10 minutes left in the call. What I did here, like the first one there is basically the GNSO Council resolution that initiate the PDP and, you know, approves basically the initiation of PDP on this specific element. And, you know, from that followed the call for volunteers to develop a drafting team, as that's the next step in a policy development process. Then I included the relevant parts that I could find back in the final issue report on the current state of the UDRP, which I just quoted a few items from. Then you also have the relevant section from the IRGP Part B final report, you know, basically noting that, you know, they respond in response to the WIPO comments, it probably should be taken as part of a review of the UDRP and not part of a review of the IRGP. And then the specific comment from WIPO that goes into a bit more detail as well on the issues they've encountered with regards to the locking and unlocking of domain names. And then two parts, one from the UDRP, which I just mentioned on the maintaining status quo. And I also found a certain section in the RAA that talks more about locking in relation to deletion or expiration of domain names that are subject to UDRP. I'm not exactly sure how relevant it is or how related that is, but I just wanted to include it so those of you that are more familiar with that can indicate whether this is something as well that should be specifically looked at and considered as part of, you know, the the next step in the working group. So I said this document is available. If you feel that other information needs to be added, you know, please let me know, and I'm happy to add it and provide an updated version. So I think that wraps up the items for review section. And I added the next part more on the next agenda item on development of a work plan to develop the charter. But, you know, we don't have much time left. And I think the only point from my perspective would like to make, as I said before, in order for the GNSO Council to consider the adoption, there are certain timelines by which the document will need to be submitted, which is a week before their council meetings, which, well, the next one it would be the 8th of February, which is probably not feasible, but the Costa Rica meeting, the deadline for submitting documents there would be the 6th of March. You know, so hopefully that might be something the drafting team will consider and then develop their plan around one of those dates to make sure that it's submitted at an appropriate timeline. And then confirmation of a next meeting. Are people happy in continuing at the same time next week and continue on a weekly schedule for now? Do people feel that's too much? Should we consider other times? I know there are some people that couldn't make this call, so we definitely should put out a mailing list as well, whether they just couldn't make today and it's not a problem for weeks to come, or whether we should explore if there are other times that are more convenient for all. Ken? Ken, can you? We can't hear you. Maybe you're on mute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
First of all, I am not certain how many people are on this call from Europe. I'm guessing that Constantino, I believe you're in Scotland. Michaela, I know you're in Ireland. I'm not sure who else is in Europe, but this is rather late in the evening for Europe. I'm guessing we're going to end at least at 8 o'clock. I think Ireland is plus 5 in Scotland. I would hope that we might consider the possibility of doing a little bit earlier in the day, possibly a middle to late morning Eastern time, not from my standpoint, but that also accounts for the West Coast. It's just food for thought, but this time is, in my opinion, not necessarily optimal, but that's just my own personal opinion. Thanks for hearing me out.
Constantinos?
Thanks, Marika. The time is not ideal, but at the same time, I've been in other working groups where people had to wake up at 12 o'clock at midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning, so I should not be complaining. What I would like to say, however, is that I'm not sure whether in the beginning we need to have weekly calls. I think this is... it is overburdened, and I am not. I think that much of the work, especially drafting this charter, can be done via email. So may I suggest that we start in the beginning of having calls every fortnight, and should need be, and closer to Costa Rica, or if we see that this group is not progressing through email communication or any other means, then we can change to weekly calls. Because I know that a lot of people in this group have other also ICANN calls to attend in between their everyday jobs. Thanks.
Michaela?
Thanks, Mika. With respect to the time of the meeting, It's fine by me, and in many respects, having a meeting outside office hours for me actually suits me fine. So I don't have an issue with having it at this time, but thanks, Ken, for the consideration. To be perfectly honest, for me, freeing up time for me during the middle of the day can be more problematic, because I mentioned previously I don't have a staff of hundreds, and much as I like to refer to them as minions, there aren't that many of them. In terms of the frequency of the meetings, I would tend to agree with Constantinos, but having a weekly meeting, it might be a little bit too much. And ultimately, if people can communicate via email, then let's do that. Let's try to actually carry out discussions via email rather than forcing ourselves into this kind of environment constantly where we may not get as much done. I mean, we might do, but there's no reason why we can't do it via email, because ultimately all we're really doing isn't discussing issues in depth. We're not looking at coming up with new policy or anything like that. It's more along the lines of putting together something coherent to go back to the GNSO Council and say, right, guys, this is what this needs to be addressing. Here are the points. Right.
Ken? Yeah, I would propose that we might consider possibly putting out another doodle poll with the idea and putting, an afternoon time, the same time we have right now, and then picking a morning time as well, and let's see whether or not we get more of a response for the morning time. I can't remember because I can't find the original doodle poll, but I don't think morning was ever even offered as an option in the original doodle poll. So just food for thought. Thanks.
This is Marika. Actually, the doodle poll did have a range of options as well, morning times from East Coast U.S., like early afternoon Europe time, but this came out as the most suitable time. And just to point out that we do have, I think Joy is based in, I think, Australia or New Zealand. So we do have some people that are in different time zones, which, you know, sometimes makes it challenging, to find a suitable time. And, another option could be at some point maybe alternating or continuing in New Zealand. So for her, probably this time is already quite early in her day, probably. But in any case, that came out as the most appropriate time, but we can definitely do another poll. At one point, I did want to make that, from experience, often groups are very ambitious in doing a lot of work on email and, really would like to encourage that, but in practice, it doesn't always happen. I hope here it's not the case, but so for that reason, it might be good indeed to set a call, in 2 weeks' time. And, of course, if the working group has already done all its work by it, or the drafting has done its work, or doesn't feel a need to for a call, it's always possible then to just cancel it, but at least in this way, people have it in their diaries and might make it easier to go ahead if needed. Would that be acceptable to the group? Constantina, do you still have your hand up, or is that an old hand? Constantina's agreeing.
That's an old hand. I agree with your suggestion, I would just like to reiterate the fact that, yes, I would really hope that this much of this work happens via email. We are not talking substance in this working group. This is just drafting the charter, and this is very important that we all bear in mind that. And, yes, let's set a call for 2 weeks. Let's commit to that in this call, and let's do a doodle poll also to see whether there will be availability in order to accommodate people like Ken. So let's, get a notion of what are the times. But let's commit to a call in 2 weeks. Thanks.
Marika?
Is that Ken?
Yes. I'm just going to propose something. I found the doodle poll, and the 2:30 time and the morning time at 10 o'clock both had the same number of positive votes. So maybe you could just do a limited doodle poll with those 2 hours. In other words, instead of opening it up all over again, see whether or not there is a significant change one way or the other. And if you still come back with the afternoon, then I think that would make it easier on everyone, rather than putting in 10 different times and starting all over again.
That's a very helpful suggestion. So you're talking about 10 o'clock Eastern time?
Well, let me look at it again here. The times that both received 7 yes votes were at 10 a.m. Eastern time and 2:30 p.m. Eastern time. The one advantage to the 10 a.m. Eastern time is that at least it's in the evening in New Zealand, but it's not at 3:30 in the morning in New Zealand. So it may be easier for people like Joy to participate on that basis than, it's just, I don't know how many people you have on the Pacific Rim in this thing, but you know, if you stratify it, we're just filtering it down. We're now at the point where there was a clear majority at those 2 hours, at 10 a.m. and 2:30 p.m. The rest of them were quite a few votes behind, and a lot of no votes, as a matter of fact, at 3:30 and at 8 and 9 o'clock. So maybe look at it from that standpoint.
Okay. That sounds good. Just to note that the other time, the early time, is actually for the Monday, because on the Tuesday it would compete or conflict with another working group we have. So if people agree, I'll just send out a doodle poll then for our Monday at, I think it's 3 UTC and 7:30 UTC on Tuesday, and then we can just see which time works better for most people. Does that work?
That's fine by me, but I'm just one member of the group.
Okay. Well, we'll just see what comes back. And I said, you know, the working group has committed to, you know, trying to do, or the drafting team is trying to commit to do as much as possible via email. So hopefully that's as well an incentive that, you know, a lot of work gets done. We don't even need any further calls. Michaela, are you still in the queue?
Well, of course, Marika, but of course.
I was just
looking at the list of participants on this group. It seems that there's a very large number of lawyers. Maybe email might. Anyway, I say that could set me tongue in cheek, of course. But, you know,
you're breaking up. I couldn't hear. I don't know if others are the same, but I couldn't hear what you were saying.
No, I was just saying, because there are so many lawyers, maybe email might work better. And, you know, every 2 weeks works fine for me. And, you know, offering a doodle with only two options makes perfect sense. So let's just do that.
Okay, great. So I think with that, we've come to the end of this call. I'll send out some notes, summarizing what we've discussed and putting forward the different suggestions that were made. And we'll get a doodle poll going for a call in 2 weeks' time, which then will either be on the Monday or the Tuesday at the current time. And hopefully we'll hear a lot from each other on the mailing list. And with that, I would like to thank you all for your time and speak to you all soon.
Thanks, Marika. Have a nice night.
Thank you. You too.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you, Marika.
Thank you.